Hello, my name is Anna Morales, and today I'm going to be reading to you Japanese fairy tales compiled by Yei Theodora Ozaki. Japanese fairy tales. My Lord Bag of Rice. Long, long ago, there lived in Japan a brave warrior known to all as Tawara Toda, or My Lord Bag of Rice. His true name was Fujiwara Hidesato, and there is a very interesting story of how he came to change his name. One day, he sailed forth in search of adventures, for he had the nature of a warrior and could not bear to be idle. So he buckled on his two swords, took his huge bow, much taller than himself, in his hand, and slinging his quiver on his back, started out. He had not gone far when he came to a bridge of Seto no Karashi, spanning one end of the beautiful Lake Biwa. No sooner he had set foot on the bridge than he saw lying right across his path a huge serpent dragon. Its body was so big that it looked like the trunk of a large pine tree, and it took up the whole width of the bridge. One of its huge claws rested on the parapet of one side of the bridge, while its tiny tail lay right against the other. The monster seemed to be asleep, and as it breathed, fire and smoke came out of its nostrils. At first, Hidesato could not help feeling alarmed at the sight of this horrible reptile lying in his path, for he either must turn back or walk right over the body. He was a brave man, however, putting aside all fear, went forward dauntlessly. Crunch, crunch. He stepped now on the dragon's body, now between its coils, and without even one glance backward, he went on his way. He had only gone a few steps when he heard someone calling him from behind. On turning back, he was much surprised to see that the monster dragon had entirely disappeared, and in its place was a strange-looking man, who was bowing most ceremoniously to the ground. His red hair streamed over his shoulders and was surmounted by a crown in the shape of a dragon's head, and with sea green dress was patterned with shells. Hidesato knew at once that this was no ordinary mortal, and he wondered much at the strange occurrence. Where had the dragons gone in such a short space of time? Or had it transformed itself into this man? And what did this whole thing mean? While these thoughts passed through his mind, he had come up to the man on the bridge and now addressed him. "Was it you that called me just now?" "Yes, it was I," answered the man. "I have an earnest request to make you. Do you think you can grant it to me?" "If it is in my power to do so, I will," answered Hidesato. "But first tell me who you are." "I am the Dragon King of the Lake, and my home is in these waters just under the bridge." "And what is it that you ask of me to do?" said Hidesato. "I want you to kill my mortal enemy, the centipede, who lives on the mountain beyond." And the Dragon King pointed to a high peak on the opposite shore of the lake. "I have lived now for many years in this lake, and I have a large family of children and grandchildren. For some time past, we lived in terror, for a monster centipede has discovered our home. And night after night, it comes and carries off one of my family. I am powerless to save them. If it goes on much longer like this, not only shall I lose all my children, but I myself must fall a victim to the monster. I am therefore very unhappy, and in my extremity, I determined to ask the help of a human being. For many days with this intention, I have waited on the bridge in the shape of a horrible serpent dragon that you saw, in the hope that some strong, brave man would come along. But all who came this way, as soon as they saw me, were terrified and ran away as fast as they could. You are the first man I have found able to look at me without fear, so I knew at once you were a man of great courage. I beg you to have pity upon me. Will you not help me and kill my enemy, the centipede?" Hidesato felt very sorry for the Dragon King on hearing his story and readily promised to do what he could to help him. The warrior asked where the centipede lived so that he might attack the creature at once. The Dragon King replied that his home was on the mountain Mikami, But that, as it came every night at a certain hour to the palace of the lake, it would be better to wait until then. So Hidesato was conducted to the palace of the Dragon King under the bridge. Strange to say, as he followed his host downwards, the waters parted to let them pass, and the clothes did not even feel damp as he passed through the flood. Never had Hidesato seen anything so beautiful as this palace built on the white marble beneath the lake. He had often heard of the Sea King's palace at the bottom of the sea, where all the servants and retainers were saltwater fishes, but here was a magnificent building in the heart of Lake Biwa. The dainty goldfishes, red carp, and silvery trout waited upon the Dragon King and his guest. Hidesato was astonished at the feast that was spread for him. The dishes were crystallized lotus leaves and flowers, and the chopsticks were made out of rarest ebony. As soon as they sat down, the sliding doors opened and 10 lovely goldfish dancers came out, and behind them followed 10 red carp musicians with the koto and the samisen. Thus, the hours flew by till midnight, and the beautiful music and dancing had banished all thoughts of the centipede. The Dragon King was about to pledge the warrior in a fresh cup of wine when the palace was suddenly shaken by a tramp, tramp, as if a mighty army had begun to march not far away. Hidesato and his host both rose to their feet and rushed to the balcony, and the warrior saw on the opposite mountain 2 great balls of glowing fire coming nearer and nearer. The Dragon King stood by the warrior's side, trembling with fear. "The centipede, the centipede! Those 2 balls of fire are its eyes. It's coming for its prey. Now is the time to kill it." Hidesato looked where his host pointed, and in the dim light of the starlight evening, behind the 2 balls of fire, he saw a long body of an enormous centipede winding round the mountains, and in the light in its 100 glowed feet like so many distant lanterns moving slowly towards the shore. Hidesato showed not the least sign of fear. He tried to calm the Dragon King. "Don't be afraid. I shall surely kill the centipede. Just bring me and my bow and arrows." The Dragon King did as he was bid, and the warrior noticed that he only had 3 arrows left in his quiver. He took the bow and, fitting an arrow to the notch, took careful aim to let fly. The arrow hit the centipede right in the middle of its head, but instead of penetrating, it glanced off harmless and fell to the ground. Nothing daunted, Hidesato took another arrow, fitted it into the notch of the bow, and let fly. Again, the arrow hit the mark. It struck the centipede right in the middle of the head, only to glance off and fall to the ground. The centipede was invulnerable to weapons. When the Dragon King saw that even this brave warrior's arrows were powerless to kill the centipede, he lost heart and began to tremble with fear. The warrior saw that he had now only 1 arrow left in his quiver, and if this one failed, he could not kill the centipede. He looked across the waters. The huge reptile had wound its horrid body several times round the mountain and would soon come down to the lake. Nearer and nearer gleamed fireballs of eyes, and the light of its 100 feet began to throw reflections in the still waters of the lake. Then, suddenly the warrior remembered that he had heard that human saliva was deadly to centipedes. But this was no ordinary centipede. This was so monstrous that even to think of such a creature made one creep with horror. Hidesato determined to try his last chance. So, taking his last arrow and first putting the end of it to its mouth, he fitted the notch to the bow, took careful aim once more, and let fly. This time, the arrow hit again, the centipede right in the middle of the head, but instead of glancing off harmlessly as before, it struck home to the creature's brain. Then, with a compulsive shudder, the serpentine body stopped moving, and the fiery light of its great eyes and 100 feet darkened to dull glare like the sunset of a stormy day, and then went out in blackness. A great darkness now overspread the heavens. The thunder rolled, and the lightning flashed, and the wind roared in fury. But it seemed as if the world were coming to an end. The Dragon King and his children and retainers all crouched in different parts of the palace, frightened to death, for the building was shaken to its foundation. At last, the dreadful night was over. Day dawned beautiful and clear. The centipede was gone from the mountain. Then Hide Sato called to the Dragon King to come out with him on the balcony, for the centipede was dead and he had nothing more to fear. Then all the inhabitants of the palace came out with joy, and Hide Sato pointed to the lake. There lay the body of a dead centipede floating on the water, which was dyed red with its blood. The gratitude of the Dragon King knew no bounds. The whole family came and bowed down before the warrior, calling him their preserver and the bravest warrior in all of Japan. Another feast was prepared, more sumptuous than the first. All kinds of fish prepared in every imaginable way, raw, stewed, boiled, roasted, and served on coral trays and crystal dishes were put before him, and the wine was the best that Hide Sato had ever tasted in his life. To add to the beauty of everything, the sun shone brightly, the lake glittered like a liquid diamond, and the palace was 1,000 times more beautiful by day than by night. His host tried to persuade the warrior to stay a few days, but Hide Sato insisted on going home, saying that he had now finished what he had come to do and must return. The Dragon King and his family were all very sorry to have him leave so soon, but since he would go, they begged him to accept a few small presents. So they said, in token of their gratitude to him for delivering them forever from their horrible enemy, the centipede. As the warrior stood in the porch taking leave, a train of fish was suddenly transformed into a retinue of men, all wearing ceremonial robes and dragon's crowns on their heads to show that they were servants of the great Dragon King. The presents that they carried were as follows. First, a large bronze bell. Second, a bag of rice. Third, a roll of silk. Fourth, a cooking pot. Fifth, a bell. Hide Sato did not want to accept all of these presents, but the Dragon King insisted. He could not well refuse. The Dragon King himself accompanied the warrior as far as the bridge, and then took leave of him with many bows and great wishes, leaving the procession of servants to accompany Hide Sato to his house with the presents. The warrior's household and servants had been much concerned when they found that he did not return the night before, but then they finally concluded that they have kept by the violent storm and had taken shelter somewhere. When the servants on the watch for his return caught sight of him, they called to everyone that he was approaching, and the whole household turned to him, wondering much what the retinue of men bearing presents and banners that followed him could mean. As soon as the Dragon King's retainers had put down the presents, they vanished, and Hide Sato took all that had happened to him. The presents which had happened from the grateful Dragon King were found to be magic of power. The bell was ordinary, and as Hide Sato had no use for it, he presented it to a temple nearby, where it was hung up to boom out the hour of the day over the surrounding neighborhood. The single bag of rice, however, was taken from it day after day for the meals of the knight and his whole family, never grew less. The supply in the bag was inexhaustible. The roll of silk, too, never grew shorter, though time after time long pieces were cut to make the warrior a new suit of clothes to go to court in a new year. The cooking pot was wonderful, too. No matter what was put into it, it cooked deliciously whatever was wanted without any firing. Truly an economical saucepan. The fame of Hide Sato's fortune spread far and wide, and as there was no need for him to spend money on rice or silk or firing, he became very rich and prosperous, and he was henceforth known as My Lord Bag of Rice. The end.